Hey, Matt, it's time for another podcast, Data-Centric Podcast. I'm Steve McDowell, Senior Analyst with More Insights and Strategy. And you are who?
Steve's assistant and golfing buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, golfing buddy.
Yeah, that's actually not true, but neither one of us golf.
My God. I golf, so I'm happy to hear that.
I golfed 30 years ago once, and that was enough.
You got banned from one golf course and decided not to try it again.
Damn.
Yeah.
So you're Matt Kimble. Matt, why don't you tell us what we're going to talk about today and who we're talking to?
So you know what's kind of cool is I'm going to give a little in my effort to be shorter in my words or fewer in my words. We talk about digital transformation a lot, how that impacts IT. 2021's coming up. More of these transformation projects are kicking off, especially with COVID, when people have to do more remote and more automatically. And so, friends of ours, Persistent is a company that helps large and small kind of navigate the waters of digital transformation and other areas across all verticals. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting to bring in the dude when it comes to strategy at Persistent. So wanted to bring in Bipin Sani, Chief Strategy Officer, to kind of talk to us a little bit about what they see and how they help customers.
Hey, Bipin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Matt, for having me here. I'm looking forward to this session.
Hey, so just to start off, because why don't you tell us a little about who you are and what Persistent does?
Yeah, so Persistent is a global system integrator and a solution provider. We typically work across the board in different areas, but the core verticals for us are banking, financial services, and insurance business, the healthcare life sciences business, the industrial practice. And, you know, our core genesis, really, the company got started 30 years ago. It's been focused on, you know, product engineering efforts. You know, so we do a lot of product engineering related work for some of the big tech giants, some of the, you know, next generation companies, primarily when they're looking to do some next generation product development or enhancing their existing products. So, you know, AI, ML, you know, as there are a lot of product companies, we actually help them improvise and modernize their applications, their products, etc. Another area which Persistent is pretty strong and powerful at and proven the point many a times is in the data space. Not just, you know, AI, ML, which is hottest conversation everywhere, but this goes back to migrating data. You know, done some very large projects in the history of banking, probably I can say it because, you know, I was involved in those projects as a customer. And, you know, it was the merger of two big banks in 2008 in the US. So data migration, data stack modernization, data usage, analytical assets, building assets for companies, big and large and small. So a lot goes on in Persistent, but more importantly, I think so our focus has been to focus on what our customers want. It's the customer-driven journey which we are on.
Is there a certain kind of company size that engages with Persistent? Or
we don't have a size segment, so to say, Matt. We've kind of worked with the big ones, like I named, you know, a few, like, you know, in the banking segment, we're working with a few big ones in the healthcare segment, same in case of industrial. And then we have layers, but we have not actually segmented them per se, you know, to us, customer is a customer. And I don't know, there's a saying in India, every customer is a God. So I think that's where we are. We treat every customer as God and we welcome every customer conversation because, you know, you never know what may happen tomorrow, right? And another factor, you know, I just want to highlight, we are a relationship-based entity also, both inside and out. And I think that's a big testament of that. You know, somebody like me who used to be a customer of theirs is now their CSO. Right. And I think that speaks a lot because, you know, and my relationship started with Persistent 15 years ago, a little over 15 years ago, when Anand Deshpande was actually running the company himself. I think those are the core building blocks for us, you know. If
I look at it. Yeah. It's, I wish more companies like yourself were a little bit more believing that the customers are the gods and that, you know, they're saying there is no opportunity that's too small to go after or a customer that's too small to help.
Yeah. I mean, we work with startups. I mean, what more can I say? If you say small means somebody who's just starting out, we've even done work for them. And we've seen some of those companies really grow up to become bigger companies and bigger enterprises. So actually, we kind of enjoy that success, you know, seeing companies grow.
Hey, so, you know, when we spoke in the past, you know, we talked a lot about digital transformation. And, you know, it's a word that I think Steve and I hear a lot as analysts and get bored by. But it's something that's real and happening in the marketplace. Have you, you know, as the CSO at Persistent, have you seen, you know, certain industries embrace digital transformation more or be more on the leading edge versus others?
Yeah. So I think that's a very important topic. And I think the whole conversation around digital transformation got accelerated starting this year. With people working from home, people not going out, people doing everything practically from home, be it banking, being healthcare, you know, telemedicine. And the companies in my mind who were not at the cusp of, you know, being able to offer those capabilities, and we've seen the acceleration because everybody is kind of, we should have done it 3 years ago and 5 years ago. So I think all said and done, the word is important, but also you have to keep in mind as people who have already in the journey or getting on the board, you need partners to kind of help you in that journey. And that is where we come in as Persistent primarily. Building solutions, launching solutions quickly. And I can take a few examples. You know, we did something very cool with Children's Hospital, you know, where they want to do launch something during COVID times, you know, in the healthcare space, leveraging Salesforce as a platform. And we launched it in 4 days. So the point is, we are a nimble company, but focused on customer value and customer attention is important. And what we are also seeing, it's not only in the banking space or healthcare space, other industries are beginning to wake up. Another area which I would like to comment on is cloud got accelerated, okay, in a big way. And there is no definition of the segment or which layer of customers, all of the above, basically, to me, because the big banks, the healthcare providers, the industrial companies, all got, who are not really taking it or not jumping on the bandwagon. Even a small credit union who has probably 4 branches in a small community is not talking cloud, you know, because of seeing what has happened.
And are there specific cloud services you've seen them kind of embrace?
Yeah, so we have played an interesting role in that construct where, you know, of course, AWS, Azure, Google, IBM announced something very cool also, you know, and we work with all of them. So the key thing for us has been, you know, as we are in this business of helping customers migrate from on-prem to a hybrid cloud, you know, ideally most companies should kind of think about the hybrid cloud model because there is still some level of sensitivity around certain data not being in the public cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And ideally, so that is where how we work with them. We work with all the 4 or 5 top cloud providers, you know, either migrating customers, either guiding them, either advising them. So we also built some interesting tools in the same context to help our customers make a quicker, faster, cheaper decision on what applications really should go to the cloud or not.
Yeah. So let me ask this. So over the past, say, 18, 24 months, we've seen the rise of this middle space between, you know, corporate-owned data center resources and the cloud with the on-prem. So, you know, I think every OEM now has some sort of consumption-based model, whether that's HPE, GreenLake, you know, Dell with their services. All the storage guys have one. And we even see Amazon and Azure pushing down with things like Outpost. What are you seeing among your customer, if anything, because I know it's still early days, with the adoption of kind of this as a service?
Yeah, actually, there is adoption. There's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of chatter, you know what I would say. And what I've also seen in the last few months primarily is we've seen the customers open to have a conversation. You know, 2 years ago, Steve, I'll be honest, not everybody was talking like this.
Right.
And I think that is a good sign. And some who jumped on the bandwagon 2 years ago, I think they have the first mover's advantage, which they got. I totally believe in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, be it in banking or healthcare, right? I mean, the bigger players were already focused on, you know, areas of that caliber. The next tier is beginning. Third tier is starting. You know, so there are different at different stages, but there is acceleration across the board in my mind.
Is there, you know, Steve and I have talked to a lot of folks, both in industry and, you know, as vendors and as IT practitioners. Yeah. And what we've heard over and over again is, you hit on it, is this notion that when COVID came,
yeah,
everybody thought they were ready to stand up remote, mm-hmm. and everybody thought they had a lights out data center, and everybody thought that all these automated capabilities they had designed worked well. But this, you know, but when COVID hit, it was like taking that newly designed ship and dropping into the water and finding all the leaks. Have you all experienced that? And, you know, any yeah. lessons from that?
Yeah, and I think that this goes back to the whole planning aspect of it, right? And your vision of the company's, you know, plan to be ready for some kind of an emergency situation. This is like an emergency which happened in January, February timeline. Where customers needed help. And I know of some customers of ours and, you know, a joint customers of, you know, us getting involved, and they moved the entire operational piece to AWS, including their virtual desktops. Okay. So they didn't leave anything in house. So I think it's the vision and the drivers and the leadership which plays a very important role, because if the leadership was not, it was dragging their feet a little bit, that didn't help. Some took very active actions. I mean, I was impressed with these couple of small entities, small banks, that they made a call, they stuck with it, and guess what? Everything was running on AWS, you know? While you know, the bigger entities, you know, it takes them longer. I mean, all fairness, you know, it's like moving a big ship to a different, you know, direction suddenly, and it takes a little longer. So what some of the companies did in that context is, I think it was the first thing what companies did was to make sure that people were safe, right? Yeah. Which is very important. Second is making sure people can work remotely, right? That was a very humongous task for some of the companies. I'm talking of big companies who have 200 plus thousand employees and, you know, that kind of a range I'm talking of. Probably, I mean, the big banks fit into that model, really. So I think the track was, they worked with their corporate property groups to first figure out the safety of the employees, the EIS groups to focus, or MIS groups, or, you know, the land support groups to make sure that people had equipment. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody had a company-owned equipment, so, you know, they had to work around. And I've also seen and heard situations in certain parts of the world where companies rented laptops, and that was a big business, okay? The person who was sitting on, like, maybe 1,000 laptops was renting these laptops to smaller and mid-sized companies ranging from 2,000 rupees to 10,000 rupees a month.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so there's a new economy got generated practically because of, you know, the COVID situation, and people couldn't buy laptops, machines were not available, you know, and I think that caused a little bit of a ripple. So first few weeks, a month or so, the focus was on those two things and making sure the business was stable, right? The sales or the operational pieces were made sure that the operations continue, right? I mean, the bank has to continue working. I mean, I'll be honest. And if they're not working and they're not prepared for this kind of operational mode, the regulators would have stepped in, you know, and our regulators are not shy when it comes to these things. In the US, at least.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things the pandemic has really brought forth, right, and you're hitting on this, is IT organizations need a certain level of agility, and a lot of these, a lot of these big organizations, you know, weren't thinking that way until they were just hit over the head with this. So, I imagine as you look at the kind of digital transformation projects that you're helping to deliver, right, a lot of this is focused around, you know, staying agile and flexible in a face of uncertain needs.
Yeah, and that is where, you know, how it got all started. It's being agile, it's being available, and you all know this, right? I would bet that most of us, if we were working 8 hours a week before all this happened, we were actually working 12 to 14 hours a day. And what has happened is, and again, we as, you know, leadership and community leaderships, and we have to think about some of the burnouts of those effects also, you know. And ideally, you know, some downtime to people is important. But those first 3-4 months, in my mind, was the most critical to go through this track, right? The other side of it is the banks and healthcare providers who had already supported the whole, you know, work from remote or support from remote or, you know, as part of the digital transformation journey, they got a leg start. They got a very good start. You know, if you had a mobile banking app which can enable you to open new conversations and accounts without coming to a branch, that was a killer, you know, in my mind. And a lot of startups actually in that segment got a lot of customers because their doors and floodgates opened, really. Right. I don't have to go to a branch. I can do everything sitting at home. I get all the information I need. So I think those things all got highlighted and accelerated, you know, and that's how I would put it. You know, and it's good for the communities, really. That is what you want to be, more nimble, more seamless, more frictionless. You know, the whole element around, you know, me being onboarded by a bank or a healthcare provider, it's challenging, right? I mean, it's not easy a year ago. But now what I see, it's actually easy. I mean, I can do everything from my home on my mobile device.
Do you find the healthcare industry being a little bit more lagging a little bit in regards to digital transformation because of all the regulations and so on and so forth? Or?
Yeah, so regulations are kind of common in all the main verticals, right? I mean, there's no less or more. But I think so what has happened is, I and me coming from a banking background, right, and now getting involved with the healthcare side, I see, and even much before COVID happened, there was a gap, I'll be honest, between where, and to me, the big financial service sector companies also have a gap with when it compares to some of the things which the startups are doing or the tech giants are doing, right? So there are multiple layers. Healthcare was, and this is where we are kind of growing in that segment right now is because, so there was no construct of a patient experience primarily thought through very clearly. There was no construct of data consolidation, data integration of data and analytical assets and insights into the data set, right? There was no patient onboarding experience like a EKYP. You know, I call that as, you know, electronic know your patient primarily. That intelligence layer was not there. Data was there. Data has always been there, but it was not integrated and connected to make it more meaningful. Right. Mm-hmm. So there are those things which weren't available. Another area like we are working on, you know, we call it as a customer engagement engine. But the idea here is to have three pillars: analytics, predictive, and conversational. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are the three core pillars how you would use data for. And I think that element was not built, and it is still being built, I would say. There are some very cool partners which we are working who are bringing this data set from a healthcare perspective into one API or a few APIs, right? Whether you may be using Epic or a Cerner as core healthcare record systems or anything else, plus the value of the data set coming from my personal devices, right? About my health profile, my Apple Watch, my Fitbit. So I think there is a lot more work to be done, but you needed this orchestration layer or a platform, which we have identified a partner in that context. And we are really excited about that space, by the way.
It seems to me when I, Steve, I didn't mean to jump on you. I just want to get this in. But it seems to me that like when I look at FSI, like financial services, that's an industry that I think that industry has long realized that you gain significant competitive edges with the use and exploit of technology. Whereas with healthcare, I understand it's all regulated, you know, they're all regulated industries, but with healthcare, it's more personal touch. It's more patient, you know, patient information is so, you know, kind of closely guarded and protected. It always makes me wonder, like, you know, have those healthcare providers kind of fallen behind the technology curve when it comes to.
They have. And I would say they're at least 5 to 7 years behind the banking space, if not more.
Interesting.
And I think so this timeline in the last 6-8 months, I see acceleration. So another example is, you know, we have something what we call as digital front door, right, which is patient engagement, patient onboarding. And we got calls from some of the biggest providers in the country, right, wanting to do this in the next 2 months, 3 months. And okay, perfect, right? Because we had the solution also ready, right? We were not building it from scratch. So I think that gave us an advantage. Some really progressive customers, providers, payers really took advantage of this timeline to actually launch new things, new experiences, or trying new things out. The next step of projects is for them to leverage the whole data integration play. Mm-hmm. Because that's important for their business, the running of the business, the operational element of their business. I mean, I shouldn't call healthcare as a business because it's about lives and stuff. But at the end of the day, somebody's paying and somebody's getting.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
So they're in a noble cause. They're trying to do their best. You know, and I'm sure you guys all know this, and all the listeners probably know this. You know, in the healthcare segment, the pharmas make the most money. Then the payers, then the providers. But providers are the ones which are helping your life.
Yes.
Initially, when you run to the hospital. So it's that value chain is important. And for us, from a persistent point of view, you know, that those three pillars are important. And in parallel to that, what we've also done in health life sciences space is we do a lot of development and technology work for companies like Thermo Fisher, Agilent. You know, so as they are releasing new products to test COVID, happen or make sure many tests can happen per day more. They are improvising their technologies. We are building technology drivers for them, integration, you know, data extraction elements, adapters, connectors for them so that their machines can talk to their other systems and the data mix is made available to a patient or the provider or to the lab technician sooner, quicker, cheaper, faster. You know, so that's the model which everybody's kind of looking at.
You know, Bipin, there's a lot of data sharing that happens from the providers to the, you know, to the, you know, kind of back through that value chain. But there's also, I spent some time in IT, public health IT back in the early part of the 21st century. And there was a big effort to kind of tie local community, yeah, state to CDC and other federal, right?
Yeah.
And it was called Finn at the time, but I know it wasn't wildly successful. Have you found that those same challenges kind of exist? And have you found that cloud and cloud native kind of technologies, you know, one API kind, yeah, of approach is enabling some of that?
Yeah, it is enabling. And in fact, you know, one full credit to CDC and to, you know, all the providers and the community, you know, the counties. Played a, yeah, very important role, right? The key thing was, if somebody got diagnosed with COVID, right, that data was made available, mm-hmm, right? It goes to the counties, it goes to CDC, it has a profile being built. And over and above, you know, and I mean, you know this, you know, the new capabilities both Apple and Google launched, right? The notification service, right? Mm-hmm. And I think those things coupled together makes it very strong and powerful. It's like, so the data was there, and we were involved in some situations where we had to make sure the integration was done right. Right. And counties were rolling up the data set to, you know, like Washington, D.C., really practically at one point, so that everybody knew. And in fact, there are some new projects which were being identified from the White House perspective also to see how, you know, how the data aggregation could happen seamlessly. Right.
Well, it's impressive to hear that some of those barriers that existed, and they're both technical, political, and otherwise, existed, how they kind of have shifted a little bit with COVID. You know, you spent 2020 kind of helping organizations of all types and sizes navigate through kind of the COVID craziness. What do you see 2021 being as kind of hot and trendy for, you know, persistent and others?
Yeah. So I'm, and my hope and prayer is that 2021 is far better than 2020, firstly.
There's a joke that right after midnight strikes on New Year's Eve, it's going to be December 32nd, 2020.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, so that's one of the things, right? Hopefully, you know, most people can get a vaccine early next year if possible, or as soon as possible, you know, so the fear goes away and the dramas around COVID goes away a little bit, right? So my hope is basically one is that, you know, and I'm seriously, this, I mean, my lifetime, I hope I don't see this 2020 as a year again. And most of us probably. So I think so. That is one hope and desire. I also look from, you know, as things stabilize a little bit, probably in Q2, Q3 timeline, right? Mm-hmm. I expect more the economy to come back too, you know, especially from, you know, that's important because, you know, the companies are back up running with employees, they're generating more, they're creating more, they're selling more, you know, the whole life cycle continues, you know, and hopefully by end of the year or third, fourth quarter, you know, things become kind of close to normal. But more importantly, what I also believe what's going to happen in the next 6 months or so is the companies who started this digital transformation journey, they're not done with it. So the emphasis will now go down to, yes, I've created the digital front door from a healthcare perspective. I've done some pieces of automation. I can now do telemedicine, telehealth. I can text a doctor and it's all through the app. And all those things are pretty, you know, getting to a you know, like basic building blocks. But the next evolution of that phase is also going to be around data. Mm-hmm. The data to me is going to be the biggest value asset going into next year or next 5 years. I would say that is where the value is going to be for the CIOs to know operationally how efficiently, you know, they are running their businesses. That's one element of it. But more importantly, what their CIOs are thinking about, how to leverage the data which I already have. See, most companies have a lot of data. There is no second thought about it. The value is how do you use the data set? How do you get value out of that data that you already have? How can you see a preventive, predictive, personalized experiences are what is important for this world going forward. And those fields need data.
Yeah.
And that I feel is going to be the major spend for companies. And this will help them, you know, optimize and make their businesses a little more efficient too, by the way, you know.
Where are they spending their, you know, where are they going to spend their money in that realm? Is it on the kind of analytics tools, and is it, yep, you know, open source driven versus a, you know, a commercial, if you will, driven kind of world?
Yeah. So I think there was what I see, and I see it across the board, not only any particular vertical, the more data you have, the more insights you can have. The more insights you have, the more insights can be made actionable. And I think so that is where the experience is going to lend towards. People are going to streamline things. And also the other factor which is going to start playing a role next year in my mind is how do I monetize my data set? Because and that not that may not be a kind of an open conversation for all the verticals, right? Some verticals will take the leap before others, right? Mm-hmm. You'll see big banks collaborate with data aggregators next year. There's integration work there. You will see, you know, like Salesforce has a big relationship with Snowflake, right? There is an integration play there, right? And when the companies are beginning to talk those languages, automatically the customers also need help, you know? So we're seeing some of these trends already come up to us. We are also spending time with, you know, understanding and what is a canonical for a bank? What is a canonical for a healthcare company, right? Yeah. Because that is where the basis lies. Now, if we have to also make sure that our customers have the right platforms to support it, right? And that's where Persistent comes into play again, you know, from a data integration, data aggregation, data, and then helping them visualize the value of this data asset they have.
Yeah.
Not only to support their own internal needs, but also to serve the customers better, you know?
Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to ask, what does an engagement look like from an IT perspective, right? If I'm in enterprise IT and I want to engage with Persistent, you know, what is it you bring to the table and what's a typical engagement kind of look like? I mean, for those who don't work with SIs.
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. So it all depends what problem are you trying to solve, mm-hmm, right? And if that's kind of important to know, right, from my perspective and Persistent perspective, right? If your focus is, I want to start focusing on data, right? Mm-hmm. That is where we typically do a little bit of an initial workshop perspective to understand what your needs are, what do you already have, run through an inventory of what sources you have, where is the data sitting? So that effort takes a little time to understand, because you'll be surprised. I have seen this in the past. People who know the data, it's sitting in their minds, by the way. They know where the data is, but the core value of some of the data and how the linkages happen internally, it's in people's minds. And sometimes they don't have a system. Sometimes it's not documented. So, you know, to help them open their thoughts and minds is very important, and documenting that is important. Once you've done that analysis, then you can start to layer out layers of how do you get to a point where you can modernize the data set, right? The data technology. I mean, would I use an ETL tool to ingest more data, or would I need something more like a streaming service to live stream and extract data using something like Apache and Kafka and other tools, you know? So I think that once we know where things are and how things are done, we actually spend time architecting the solution, which is very important for any entity. The building blocks, the technology stacks required for it. Some you may already be using, some you may need to use, right? And the whole value prop is making sure when we work with a customer and when we walk out of the customer engagement, you're not calling us every day. We don't want to entertain a call every day. Practically being, making sure that your people are trained, people are cross-trained, people are educated, they know how to run their shop if you have a team. Now, if you don't have a team from an IT perspective, that's where, again, Persistent has to offer is a managed service offering in this space to help you move to the cloud, manage your cloud infrastructure, manage your data loads, manage your payloads, and all aspects of that. So there's a long run of things which we could be doing for a healthcare provider or a bank or a industrial customer. But ideally, starting to have a conversation with some of our senior leaders to understand, you know, what experience we bring is equally important. You know, you can throw technology at any problem, but, you know, you've got to also know the domain. And another value which I want to highlight is we have domain experts sitting in our company, you know, be it healthcare, be it banking, be it industrial, be it, you know, core, hardcore ISV business like people. But business domain is very important. And that is something which we have built teams of as part of my setup in Persistent.
That was very, very compelling. Can I ask just a couple of following questions before we kind of close out here? The first is, it seems to me that, data monetization, you know, kind of, as you said, turning data into intelligence, into actionable outcomes, that is everybody's focus. Whether you're a million employees strong or you're 10 employees strong, right? It's making use of that data that you have at your fingertips. That's somewhat complex, right? And I'm guessing the bigger the company, the more complex. Do you believe that? But as a large company, I have the ability to kind of pour resources at these problems, or engage with the Persistent and engage with the Persistent. Do you think this data management story and challenge becomes somewhat democratized so that the smaller companies are able to take advantage of it as well?
Yeah, and I agree to that. See, Matt, another thing, you know, I should highlight, you will run into companies who don't have a data model even. Mm-hmm. So that is a problem there, right? And I think data management, or master data management, as people call it, right, in terms of the technology area, you know, how do you create that canonical, how do you create that MDM story for your enterprise? And so from our perspective, we have data modelers, data designers, as people call them, analytics, data analytics resources. We bring on business analytics, because you need to think about the business problem you're really trying to solve. You're not just solving a tech problem. Right. So I think how we package it is we bring all pieces together, you know, all pieces together working in sync, and a technology team to follow where, because now I need to move this data from one place to another, or I need to modernize the stack. So I need to do a migration project. When I talk about migration project, that means a lot of new technologies. See, I did one of the biggest migrations in my life when I was at Wells Fargo, okay? When we brought the two banks together from a corporate and commercial banking side. In the history of U.S. banking, that's the biggest, largest merger ever done till today. So, and Persistent did that for me. So I think the key element is, you know, trusting your partner is important, but very important. And I'll give you an example of that, because I personally dealt with this, you know, when we brought the two big banks together, right? I had a team of three people from Wells Fargo, full-time people. Three people. Think of it. I had a little over 150 people from Persistent working on it. So So there is that element of understanding trust, learning the domain, knowing the domain, knowing the technology to use for the migration. Because when we were doing those migrations, right, it was a date was fixed. A date was never changed because it was committed to the regulators. It was committed to the stock markets, right, on what dates we will be moving which state. Yeah. And it would happen over a weekend,
yeah.
Okay, every weekend.
Yeah.
So we would pick up a state and get a timeline and a calendar, how we did the merger. But the key thing was the migration primarily, that we stuck to the plan. But before we got to that date, we had practiced it at least 50 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you walked into a branch in Charlotte on a Friday, you would see the Wachovia logos and everything.
Yeah.
When you walked into the same branch on Monday morning, you would see everything was fine,
yeah,
including the systems supporting that region. So it has to be the orchestration and management of that takes real effort.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of hard work. I mean, we worked for practically 3.5 years nonstop.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Nonstop.
That is incredible.
To have zero customer impact.
Yeah.
And that is what you want to hear from the story when you walk. And that is what I am 100, 200, 300% confident that if you as a customer, you're listening, and if you're thinking of moving to cloud or a hybrid cloud model, the data migration effort has to be thought through very clearly.
Yeah.
Because that's where this, either you'll make it or you'll break it. and the technologies have changed. I did this in 2008. Today is 2020. Next year is 2021. Would I go and use the same technologies I used in 2008? No.
Right. It's a different world, right?
Yeah.
Hey, one last question for you. You know, with 2020 being as crazy as it is, and yeah, you talked about big rush to the cloud from companies of all sizes, or embracing the cloud even more.
Yeah.
I think there's a rationalization that happens when, you know, this COVID rush kind of starts to normalize and people pull back more, or are they fully invested?
Yeah. Well, I think so. They'll be ready to invest more.
Yeah.
Looking at, you know, the growth opportunities in their businesses, economy is shifting a little bit, going in the right direction. Yeah. I see growth from that perspective. I also see, you see, so one other factor which I'm seeing right now, okay, especially in the cloud, since we're talking about cloud, you know, all the cloud providers have done a good job in providing you the bare metal infrastructure, right? Yeah. They've done an excellent job, and they've been trying to move companies, banks, healthcare providers to that side. Where they are going to focus on, and which they have already started to focus on because we are partnering with them, is to come up with solutions which are already hosted in those cloud operating models. And I think also we've launched something in BFSI space, banking. The digital banking platform is already on AWS, right?
Mm-hmm.
Salesforce is another player and partner of ours, a very important partner because we do a lot of cool work with them, for them, and for our joint customers, be it in healthcare or life sciences or banking space. IBM has announced FS Ready Cloud, right, earlier this year, like maybe 3 months ago. So I think they're all now getting to a point where, okay, I have given the basics, I've given you an environment, now can I offer you a solution on top of it?
Yeah.
And so I also see that push, and actually all the cloud providers are going to be hungry and, in my mind, wanting to grab some piece of the pie of the action in that context also. And again, companies like Persistent are playing a very important role in that ecosystem. You know, we are partners with all of them, I mentioned.
Yeah. It's like the organizations had to embrace the cloud for maybe, you know, for other purposes during COVID, and that gave them a confidence to push even more of 2021 and beyond.
Yeah. And see, the other thing is, you know, Matt and Steve, when you look at a large enterprise, if I have to wait for 6 months to get a piece of hardware, versus if I can get it sooner right now, and I think you'll see a pretty much a good uptake on that next year. When things start to, you know, normalize, primarily from a point that we're back to 2019 or 2018.
I wish we're going to be back to 2019. I thought I'd say that, but yeah.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean, it's like getting back to normal life where you and I can go have a coffee or a drink versus, you know, everything is on Zoom. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally miss the personal meetings. I mean, I'll be very honest. And most people do.
I hear it. If I have, if I get invited to one more virtual happy hour, I'm going to pull the rest of my hair out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting too much. And I think it's, hopefully everything settles down. And, you know, and again, I, you know, want to thank all the, you know, pharma companies, because this is their time to prove they were able to move fast and quick, right? Sure. Because, I mean, I've never heard a new medicine being approved by FDA less than 5 years or 6 years timeline. Yeah. So I full credit to them, full credit to FDA, full credit to the CIOs of the pharma companies, and more importantly, the frontline workers. To me, they have risked their life to save other lives. And I think that nobody can replace that.
Absolutely.
Nobody can replace that.
Absolutely. Hey, so Pippin, thank you for taking the time with us today. I know I learned a lot. I took a lot of notes. I say this every time we do a podcast, but I've been sitting here jotting. You triggered a lot of thoughts in my mind, you know, things to think about, right, as we think about digital transformation and the whole model. And you're right. It's all about the data. So this has been great. So we're going to have you back again, you know, sometime after the new year.
I love talking to Matt and you. I mean, so, you know, even when Matt and I first connected, I said, wow, I mean, this is good to have a conversation when I first had my first chat with Matt.
Absolutely.
So again, I thank you guys for doing this and inviting me to be part of your podcast.
Yeah, we'll definitely check in with you in a couple months and kind of see how 2021 is starting up for you and kind of what you're seeing and what your engagements are looking like.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Happy holidays, everyone, and stay safe. Continue to stay safe. That's more important.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.